Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 13 of the Well and Wild podcast. I'm Susie Clark, the host of this podcast. I realised I never actually introduced myself at the start of the episode, so there you go. But this week I am just so excited and feel so grateful for our guest coming on because he is such an inspiration and he has been an inspiration for me personally as well. We'll go into it in a bit more detail, but what he's done is definitely really, really inspired me to take action on my own kind of ventures. And a lot of what I've done this year has been a result of being inspired by some of the content that he's created. So really, really grateful that he's come on the episode this week. So this week we have Mark Whittle of Take Flight joining us. Mark has an incredible podcast of his own called Take Flight. He has since grown the podcast into a brand and a business. He's done events, which we talk about as well. And he started the podcast after realizing that his corporate job wasn't bringing him complete fulfillment. Mark also went through his own kind of mental health battles as well over the last few years. And it's those kind of challenges of lack of fulfillment in job and mental health issues that led him to channel his energy into starting a podcast to essentially help others in a similar situation, and myself being someone who benefited from his content. And I think that's just such an inspiring thing to do, you know, hitting kind of a very challenging time and then bringing your mindset up to a point of actually, I'm going to spin this and flip this and use it as a positive and try and help others in the same situation. And I think he kind of found his purpose in that way. And I just think that's so inspiring that someone going through a negative time can kind of flip it on its head. And I hope that if anybody's out there feeling the same, I think they can take some inspiration in that, that it doesn't always have to be that way. You can choose to make it a positive. If it resonates or you know someone that listens to Mark's podcast, I would be very grateful if you could share this episode with them because I feel like Mark showcases so many incredible guests on his podcast, but sometimes we don't hear so much about the host. So it was just so great to go into his journey and understand a bit more about why he's done what he's done. So I hope you enjoy it, and here's the episode. Welcome, Mark. How are you? How's your weekend?
Hey, Susie. Thank you. It was amazing. Thanks. Had a really good weekend. I was just telling you there before we started.
Yeah.
I did my first open water swimming race, which was good fun.
Amazing. How was that?
It was awesome. It was really good. It was called the Club to Pub Swim in Henley.
Nice.
And my brother got it for me as a Christmas gift. So I've been doing a bit of training. It was only 1.5K, which is quite a nice distance. So
yeah,
you can push yourself the right amount and they give you a beer at the end as well, which is always a nice reward.
Amazing. Was it cold? Yeah.
Had a wetsuit on. Yeah, both. Had a wetsuit on, so it was fine. It was 19 degrees, which apparently is a fine temperature for water swimming. Yeah.
Good conditions. Okay, amazing. So we're going to dive into your story in a bit more depth later on, but it'd be great if you could start by introducing yourself to the listeners.
Of course. So my name is Mark Whittle. I have a business called Take Flight, which started off as a podcast. I think one of the sort of few businesses these days that start with a podcast rather than the other way around, where people tend to start one because they have a business or they're trying to sell something in the first place. But it started as a podcast, has moved into events and got lots of exciting things coming up in the future. But it all came from, I suppose, which we'll speak about more in the future of the episode, from a place of feeling unfulfilled and feeling like there was more to life. And I guess what I want to do is try and contribute, and I flipped my mindset from a place of, I guess, being quite selfish to wanting to speak to people, help people, and I guess connect people as well. So, yeah, the business is called Take Flight. I'm loving every single second of energy that I'm putting into it, and I'm excited to see what the future holds.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I'm a massive fan of the podcast as well. And it's definitely one of those ones that kind of inspired me to take action as well. So definitely love what you're putting out. And I can't wait to chat more about that later on. But let's start by going into your background a little more. So from my research and listening to your podcast, I know that you kind of started out when you were younger playing a lot of football. That was kind of your identity. And you went to the US to get a scholarship, right? So let's maybe talk a little bit more about that kind of initial stage.
Yeah, okay. So I grew up in a little place called Olney in Buckinghamshire, which is about 40 miles north of London. So I do find that people who grew up just on the outskirts, kind of looking in at the bright lights of the city, always had aspirations of bigger things. Not always the case, but I think that definitely was the case for me and my brother. And I watched my dad go into the city and work in sales and build a media company and do all these exciting things, traveled around the world, setting up different offices and stuff. And to me, I always aspired to try and do exciting things like that. But from a young age, you can't obviously go into business. So the way that we had, I guess, kind of aspired to achieve things was in school or in sport. And I took the sport route.
Yeah.
We were introduced to sport from a very young age. Did everything from, you know, snowboarding, football, gymnastics, swimming,
nice,
karate, boxing, tennis, everything. We just threw ourselves into everything. Yeah, because it was just so much fun, and I still love sport now. And it made me who I am today, I think. So football was the one that stuck. It was the one that I seemed to be the most talented at, and the one that I enjoyed the most, actually. And I made some of the best friends ever from playing the sport around the world. And most of my best friends still to this day are people that I played football with and shared a pitch with in the past. So, yeah, I played it from a very young age, put a lot of time into it, whether it was just after school kicking around or whether it was proper training sessions with clubs and playing every weekend, traveling around the country. Mm. And I just think sport does so much for you, as I'm sure you'd agree, that you learn everything from winning, like how to win and lose, how to adopt your mindset, how to grow and how to learn different skills, how to look at your weaknesses. And I think they're just invaluable skills to take away from a young age, and they make you who you are. And I think I sometimes think about this. I think that people who haven't experienced that probably have a disadvantage in life.
Yeah, and I agree.
Yeah, I guess people can find it in other places, I'm sure. But I think sport is just such a fantastic place to do that. And you can take all of those skills into the business world, which I've tried to do.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. And I think because I played a lot of sport growing up as well, and I think when you're such a young age, it can really like influence your personality, but in such a positive way. And like your resilience, team building, like ability to get on with people. And like, I think there's just this thing when you know someone who's like really sporty, you just have like a mutual understanding of like this thing and how to go about life, if that makes sense.
100%. I mean, even just then when before we started chatting or before we started recording and you said, oh, I know from my research that you're really sporty, yeah, and so was I. And as soon as you said so was I was like, oh, cool.
Just so get it on a level. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I think there's that situation when you go into a new team or a new sport and you're trying something and, you know, people kind of look at each other, like sizing each other up a little bit, like, oh, I wonder what they're like. And then when you play and you connect like on a physical level with somebody, like in competition, you immediately have a bond with somebody, and that lasts a lifetime, I think.
Yeah, totally agree. So this scholarship to the US, was that for like uni, or how did that work?
Yeah, so as I started to grow up, I played for different clubs at a pretty decent level, and I always wanted to do it for fun, really. I never really looked at it as being a professional or anything, but I did play for Northampton and I did play for Leicester in the academies.
Nice.
Yeah, it was great fun, but it was quite serious. So I didn't get professional contracts with either club. I was at Northampton for the longest period of time. I was there for about 2.5 years, didn't get a contract. And then I went and trialled with Leicester for 6 months and I didn't get a contract again. But I think everything meant to be, and there's a reason that that happened. And I kind of left the game for about a season. And then I started to get back into it, playing semi-professionally in and around kind of where I grew up at different clubs. And then I went to university. So I went to uni at Leeds and played for the university team there.
Nice.
And one of the years, some people came into the uni and said, you've got opportunities to play in the US and get a scholarship. And funnily enough, the reason why I'd gone to Leeds in the first place was because they offered a sandwich year, where you could travel to the US and swap with somebody and go and study in a US school, which is something I'd always done because from a young age I was lucky enough to travel to the US and I just loved it. I felt like really at home there. I loved the energy, I loved the positivity and the weather.
Sadly,
when I got to Leeds, they'd stopped the sandwich year. But as I said, everything happens for a reason. And these people came in and said there's opportunities to play in the US if you're any good. So I went over to Man City, meet facilities in Manchester, and did a full trial. They did the trial. They built this full profile for you online and positioned you as a player to the clubs in the US. So
nice.
Yeah, I got a few offers and I basically just chose the one that offered a full scholarship and ended up playing in Ohio for a couple of years, which was one of the best experiences I've had in my life.
So, yeah, I bet. What was that like?
It was just unlike anything, and it was unlike anything I'd experienced from America and unlike anything I imagined it to be like. It was
really,
yeah, it's Midwest America, so it's real America, and all the massive big brands like Johnson & Johnson and all the huge big American corporations trial their products in Ohio because that's the most real representation of what the US is. Which I thought was interesting because I'd only ever been to places like Florida and California, which are like very touristy and quite commercialized. So you're living in real sort of redneckville almost. It's like really like that, like kind of how you see it in some of the films. So it was really eye-opening to live somewhere like that. And it was just the most incredible experience to be able to train every single day with people who are like-minded, like we were talking about earlier with sport, like just getting on with people on such a great level. Traveling around the US, going to various places, like played in places like Nashville, Chicago, played in Indiana, in Philadelphia, like all these places, just traveled around and got to play the sport that I loved for 2 years. So yeah, I loved it.
That's an insane experience. I think, yeah, that's so cool to hear. Okay, so then from the US, did you go back to London and get a job? Was that kind of your first segue into the corporate world?
Yeah, so actually, there was about 9-10 months in between leaving university and going to the US while I was waiting for my scholarship to be sorted out. So I dipped my toe into sales then. I'd always kind of been interested in sales because my dad built a sales business in the city. He built a media company. It was the idea behind trolley advertising before tech kicked off. So he would buy the trolleys from the supermarkets and then position the space on the front of the trolleys to the big brands like Kellogg's, Nestle, all that sort of stuff. So from the ground up almost, watching him go into London every morning. And he'd always told me, you'd be good at sales. So I do find it fascinating how you follow these certain paths. There's a saying that you are what you see, or you be what you see, or something like that. Sorry, what you see is what you be. Something like that.
One of those. We got it.
Yeah, I've nailed it. But because of whatever you're exposed to, it has such an impact on you. So he'd put that in my mind from a young age that I'd be good at selling. So I'd always kind of thought, you know what, I always used to say I want to be an international managing director of a sales company.
Specific.
I know, because he traveled around like really cool places. So I was like, that sounds like a great idea. So that had always been in the back of my mind, even through playing all the sport, regardless of the success, I always had the idea and the mindset that business was going to be where I made my money and where I had a career. Whenever I came back from the US because of an injury, and it was always going to be sales. So from day one, I started calling recruiters and speaking to people about how I could get into that. So I dipped my toe in gym sales before I went to the US, found out that I actually was quite natural at sales. It's quite easy to sell health, I found. So I wouldn't want to do gym sales for my career, but you know, the people that do, fair play, because it's quite difficult to, there's so much competition, but I kind of, you know, when you have your eyes open to something, you go, okay, I'm actually quite good at that. So probably that's a good idea to test the water a little bit more, maybe.
Okay, makes sense. And I think it would be good to maybe jump forward as well to the point that you realized that the corporate world, I don't know whether it was like not what you thought it was, or whether you just kind of realized, actually, this isn't completely fulfilling me. Like, at what point did that start to happen? And What happened then?
I mean, there were inklings of it from day one.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, you kind of just ignore it. I mean, we're brought up in this world of conventional success being the goal and the ambition. And I wanted to please people, including myself, my own idea of success. And I felt that if I didn't do that in a big corporate earning lots of money, then I wasn't doing the right thing and I wasn't achieving anything. I think as well, I'd also put working off as much as possible with my football. I felt almost like I was chasing a little bit as well. So I had to prove myself even more. Mm. But from day one, I realized it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And immediately started to have a little bit of disappointment and not maybe making the most of my experience with sport and everything as well. Because I think even during playing the sport, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, I can't wait to get out and get into the business world and make loads of money. And that's when life starts. And that's when I can have the lifestyle I want. And it sounds pathetic, but I used to think about how exciting it was going to be to get an iPhone and have Instagram when I was in America. Seriously.
Yeah. Like,
because people were sharing all the fun things they were doing, and I was looking at it on a web browser on a laptop, thinking how amazing it would be. And if I could go back now, I'd be like, put off Instagram and all that social media stuff as much as possible. But yeah, the big kind of tipping point came when it's a steady build up of feelings and I suppose negative emotions around it. But the big tipping point was after a particularly stressful period, and I had a really big deal that I was trying to close. And thankfully I did close it, but I realized that like the day immediately afterwards that I felt exactly the same regardless of my bank balance changing. And I got off the tube at Moorgate and there was loads of homeless people on the floor, and even retelling the story now, I can feel the emotion that I felt when I was walking past. I just felt really sad and I felt a bit guilty that I felt a bit guilty about the amount of money that I earned, to be honest with you. And I don't know why. I felt almost a little bit ashamed and that I had a responsibility to do more with it than just buy clothes and go on holiday. So I didn't really expect to feel like that. And then I felt very selfish and I wanted to do more to help people, whether that was people who were homeless or people who were suffering with what I've suffered with, which was mental health at times. So yeah, I think that's where it started, Susie, and then it got a little bit worse until I took action on something.
I totally get that, and it resonates with me as well because I have a sales background too, and I think our society kind of pushes us into these types of careers because there's this sort of snobbery around getting a degree and having to then go and get a grad scheme, and like there's this snobbery around salary or like company name that you work for, that kind of thing, and there's a real pressure. But at the end of the day, unless you can connect with the like mission of the company or the actual like something tangible that you're providing for people and improving people's lives, it's really hard to get behind what you're doing and get the motivation every single day. And in reality, from my experience, and I don't know if you felt the same, it just felt like you're earning commission and then spending it on the next designer bag or like the next like long haul fancy holiday to feel good about myself. But then that only lasts for a certain amount of time before then you want to go and get the next one. It's kind of an artificial goal or satisfaction. It doesn't really make you inherently happy, if that makes sense.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I've got a few things to say about that. I mean, the first one would be you're never going to connect with a mission statement from a business ever as much as the founder. The founder sits in a room with a few of his important execs and comes up with this mission statement that he believes people are going to buy into. It might not even be his passion, it might not even be his desire, his burning desire for the business and the direction he wants it to go in, but it's an idea he comes up with because he thinks people are going to buy into it. That's what's so frustrating, and that I struggle with, because if you're going to start your own business, it's the same thing. Even if it's coming from a place of authenticity, no one's ever going to buy into your business idea as much as you. So the challenge is finding someone who is going to get as close to being excited and enjoying it as much as you. And I couldn't agree more as far as the materialism. I think especially in the world that we came from and that I'm still in, it's a very materialistic world. It's a very egotistical world. We're day to day, we're chasing a target, a number. So constantly trying to get money in for this business. And we're constantly adding up the commission that we're going to get paid into our bank to buy things that we don't really care about, to impress people that we definitely don't really like.
Yeah.
It's interesting we're having this chat now, actually, because I've not spoken about it, but this weekend I did a full clear out and I've never felt better. Like throwing away clothes, like even stuff, like some stuff was like pretty much brand new. And the reason I did it was because I was going to be moving out of London and then the sale fell through. So I'm going to be in the flat for a little bit longer. And I just felt like so overwhelmed with all the shit that's in my flat. So I've thrown away like 7 black bin bags full of stuff.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but I feel like so unreal. True. I feel amazing, but it's because you get stuck in that world and you hear other people. And again, we're talking about influence and impact before, but this is on the negative side of it. It's like you get stuck in this world of people talking about the next watch or car that they're going to buy, or the next house that they're going to buy, or whatever. And it's so easy to just be like influenced by that and want to do the same thing.
Yeah, and it's like consumerism almost as a desperate attempt to make yourself happy, but it's like a short-term hit until you find the next thing that you want. Okay, so let's get on to, so you started feeling like that, you started feeling like you wanted to do something else or add something into your life. How did you come about choosing a podcast as the thing that you wanted to start doing?
So podcasts had a massive impact on me personally. So I'd listened to amazing podcasts like the Tim Ferriss Show. I listen to Joe Rogan more now, just from a professional point of view, because I think he's brilliant. But I didn't listen to it as much back then. But Tim Ferriss, I found, was massively helpful. Lewis Howes' School of Greatness, I thought was amazing.
Yeah.
And they really impacted me, especially when I started off in my jobs and trying to become better and learn more about business. And this was before I was awake to the idea that the corporate world wasn't for me. So at the time, it was really inspiring to listen to other people who had built businesses and who worked within businesses. And I think, again, this came from a time when I was probably living from a place of ego. I felt like I could do an equally, if not better, job than Tim Ferriss.
Yeah, but why not? You know. Yeah.
So it had been something that I'd had in my mind for a while. I remember actually going on holiday to Sardinia and I listened to about 20 episodes during a week, and I was just so embedded with the stories and so inspired by the stories. And I took a lot of that into my working life when I got back from that holiday. And then I just felt like I could do something similar, because what I did day to day was interview people to understand what their business requirements were to try and sell them something. So I wanted to interview them for something that I was actually more interested in, which is how they found happiness and how they got successful. And from a selfish point of view, how can I then put that into my life to be happier? Because at the time I didn't feel happy. And I had some amazing people around me that were doing brilliant things, including my brother, my family, friends of mine who are professional athletes, and the list goes on and on and on. And it's got bigger. And now I interview great people who I never knew before and never thought I'd be able to meet, but have done through the podcast. So it was a medium that at the time, probably 2 years ago, it was still massive, but wasn't as big as it is now. And it gave me a good opportunity to get in front of people who perhaps hadn't done podcasts before or had only done a few. So yeah, it was just something that I really wanted to do. I felt it would be a good medium for me and utilize my skill set. And because I'm not overly tech savvy, even though we were saying about working in tech.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. I can relate to that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, they hate me. Yeah, it was one that I felt utilized my skill set. I had enough knowledge around it that I could actually do it myself on my own without any help or support. Things like YouTube channels seemed a bit scary. So podcast was the avenue I went down.
Yeah, I love that. And I think I just want to pause on that as well and just say to the listeners that obviously you had a point where you were like, right, I feel really shit. This is like not necessarily the path I want to be on. But then you actually were able to say, okay, what can I do instead? And then take action on that, which I think is really good and an important message for anyone who is out there feeling a bit crap, that maybe just take a step back and like, there's so many things you can start on the side now. Just have a look down the list, like Google side hustle and see what you can do and just see what resonates with you. And then also, so I heard on another podcast when I was doing my research that it took you 2 years from when you decided you wanted to start the podcast to actually starting it. And I want to talk about that for a second, because I had a similar experience. So probably within my first year of starting like my corporate job, I realized that I wanted to start my own business, but I procrastinated for so long. And to be honest, now I understand a lot more about personal development and I'm more self-aware. And I know that it was like a mindset thing. So like far too many limiting beliefs. And my understanding of the world was like too narrow for me to step out and put myself out there as a different version of Susie, if that makes sense, rather than the Susie that has the corporate title and whatever So I'm interested from your perspective of what went on during those 2 years that made you put it off, but then what actually changed that made you take action on it?
So I think first of all, it's worth saying it's okay to procrastinate and take a while for an idea to settle in your mind. Yeah. I think sometimes these things can take a bit of time. And it's not always right to do it right now. I think you know deep down when is the right time. And I think that starting to take flight, when I did, it was the right time. I'd developed enough as a person, been through, as you said, enough personal development and self-discovery to understand enough about who I was to go on the journey to try and find out a little bit more. But the reason it took so long was because A, I was comfortable in a job earning money and I could go about my day to day. I wasn't uncomfortable enough to try and make a change.
Yeah.
I wasn't in a bad enough place to do something about it. So the key difference was I hit my version of rock bottom at that time in my life. Hopefully I don't go there again, but people have varying levels of their rock bottom in their experience of their life. That was mine at that time. And I could do one of two things. I could either wallow and turn to things like alcohol and or moaning, complaining, and burying stuff. Or I had another option, which was to take action on something, try and change my circumstances. And the quickest thing that I could see, the quickest way I could see to change my circumstances was doing something like this, which might sound a little bit strange. I didn't want to change my job because I didn't want to uproot from a business that was actually pretty good, gave good benefits, gave me a level of security and flexibility. I didn't want to go into another industry. I didn't want to make a massive change with like where I lived as far as like what country I lived or anything like that. But I wanted to do something that allowed me to focus my attention elsewhere in the periods where I didn't feel good about myself, generally speaking. So what that meant was turning my attention to a passion project on the side, like in the evenings at weekends. And the big difference was purely the fact that I wasn't in a bad enough place. And when I was, that's when I finally decided. And that just took 2 years, annoyingly. I've spoke to people on Take Flight. It's taken them 9 years to get to that place. It's taken them 7 years. Some people even longer. I'll take 2 years, but hopefully next time it doesn't take me quite so long. Yeah. So I think the events took me about a year. So I first had that idea. But I have it now, Susie. I was thinking over this weekend about an idea that I cannot wait to get into. But all Sunday afternoon, yesterday, I was thinking about, why do you think you can do that?
Yeah.
And it's just a case of building that mental strength, even after you've achieved things, to believe in yourself that you can do it. And it took me probably an afternoon to change my mind and go like, oh, actually, you're just saying that story to yourself again, which you say quite often, which is you're not good enough to do that. So why am I saying that? Oh, okay, it's because of X, Y, and Z. Look at what you've done. I've achieved this, this, and this. I can do it. Let's start planning out a way to do that next thing. So I think, like you mentioned, self-awareness, it's just a case of like being super self-aware so you can catch yourself when you think those things. But yeah, to answer the question, I wasn't in a dark enough place, and when I was, I finally took action.
Yeah, I think that's a really refreshing message that, you know, you saying you felt like that, because I think a lot of listeners will resonate with that, and I also do as well. And I, when you were talking just then, I was thinking that kind of like the time that it takes you to build up to actually taking action on something, I definitely think there's proactive things that you're doing during that time, but you don't necessarily realize it at the time. Like, were you doing a lot of personal development stuff? Like, were you, because for me, it was almost like I was looking into exactly what was like causing me to feel like this, like what's my values, what, like understanding myself, like do I actually like this, like what's important to me. Were there kind of proactive things that you were doing during that time?
Oh, all the time, every day. I mean, during that 2 years is probably the most intense period of personal development I've ever done. Every single month I was sitting down on the first of the month and mapping out my where am I coaching method, which I use, which my dad taught me, which nice. I did every single month. And this is the stuff that I get a little bit frustrated about. And again, you've got to be kind to yourself, but I get a little bit frustrated about because it's the stuff that I lose and forget when you're in a bit of a rhythm and you find yourself in some momentum, which can be good and bad because you can also be blurred by how busy you become. But at that period of time, because I wasn't doing 101 things a day, I had the time to give myself space, mind space to like go through these coaching methods at the first of every month. So there's, you probably know all about this, but there's a coaching practice called the Wheel of Life or the Seven Equities, which looks at, you kind of gives you a bird's eye view of where you are. So it goes through mind, body, spirit, family, friends, and your career and finance. And then you can grade all of those areas out of 10. And then that allows you to look at the areas where you're particularly low or you feel like you're particularly low, focus on those. And then you can set goals for that month or that period in time to bring those levels up. So if, let's say, for example, that you're low on family and friends, but you're high on career and finance. It means you're working all the time, evenings you're working, weekends you're working, you're not seeing your family and your friends, so you feel bad about yourself that you're not perhaps building those relationships as much as you want. So then you can set goals around that. You can go, right, I'm going to see my friends every Thursday night this month. My ones were generally more around like wellness because I was going through a period of fatigue, which we might talk about later. So I was looking at like mind, body, spirit very regularly in that period of my life. So I would put meditation practices into my morning. I would make sure I was getting the right amount of gym exercise, not too much because it was impacting my health. Fatigue is like a really frustrating thing where no one can really diagnose you with how much you can and can't do. So I was having to really manage that. I was setting goals around reading. So I was getting the right material into my mind and I was growing the right way. And again, this is why, had I started the podcast 2 years previous, I wouldn't have been in a place to be able to talk about a lot of the stuff that we talk about on the podcast. And it definitely wouldn't have taken off as it has. So yeah, I was doing a lot of stuff, although I didn't know it was for a podcast. The idea was in the back of my mind. I wasn't doing it because I wanted to do a podcast. I was just doing it because I wanted to be better and put habits and routines in that were going to improve me.
I totally get it. And I think through those exercises and through that work, you're kind of building yourself up to a point that when you actually put yourself out there, you're kind of protecting yourself to a point, if that makes sense. Because if you're really unhappy with your own life or yourself and you put yourself out there, you're so vulnerable and exposed and you're probably going to give up because it is difficult to just put yourself out there initially. Yeah. So I totally resonate with what you're saying there.
Yeah, I also think it's worth saying as well that I had a group of people around me who were doing awesome things. So it almost felt like a bit of a responsibility that I had to step up to the plate as well. So largely this, you know, this goes to both my mum and dad had their own businesses. So I'd seen it from a young age. So I was always guided towards doing something like that. But my brother was doing amazing things. All people in our network were doing amazing things. So although at the time I didn't really think about it, now I look back and I think, yeah, Jesus, I had to. Like me and my brother have a really nice relationship where it's like competitive, but not to the point where you're like, in a negative way, you know?
Yeah.
So even with just this swim race, you know, we were competitive against one another, but we swam next to each other the whole way. So it's like, I think it's important as well that you surround yourself with the right people in times like that. So if you do have a good idea, surround yourself with people who might be doing inspiring things that make you want to do it more.
Totally agree. And I just want to talk a little bit about the mental health stuff as well, because you talk a lot about mental health in your podcast. And I think it's really amazing that you're raising this kind of awareness, because I like how you kind of gently push your guests to talk about their experiences, because often, and this is stereotypical, but often the guests that you have on are quite like macho type guys, like fighters and like really competitive. And they, on the whole, don't tend to talk about this kind of thing. But I think it's really refreshing to hear them talk about that kind of topic, because it does hit everyone. So it would be great to kind of just touch upon like why you think that message is important, and kind of your experiences of that as well.
Yeah, of course. And thank you for coming to my event, by the way.
That's okay. I'm going to talk about that in a bit.
Okay. I'm getting ahead of myself.
It was great. So, we can talk about it now.
No, it's okay. We can. I can answer your question first. So I think that it's so important because it's something that you can have an immediate impact with people, because every single person has experienced mental health to a different degree. So I was someone who was always very positive. I had an amazing life as a kid, amazing experiences, always had good success in sport and loads of friends and all that sort of stuff. I never, ever thought I would be upset, sad, depressed, all of the above. So, you know, sadly, I did have an experience like that and still do. And I wanted to talk about it, because if I don't, then to be honest with you, the more you hold it in, the worse it feels. And every time I talk about it, I feel a little bit better about it, and it takes that weight off your shoulders. And I know that anybody who's a high achiever and a peak performer has been through the same thing, because it's peaks and troughs. And if you're somebody who's very high frequency and ambitious and driven to achieve things, naturally there are going to be things that are going to make you feel bad at times, because you either hold yourself very accountable to your actions, and if you're not achieving them in the time frame that you want them to, you can feel bad. You either get disappointed with where you end up. You feel like you could always be doing more. If you're someone who sets goals, you're always looking forward. You're always looking to the future, and that's something that could put more pressure on you. So I just felt that so many people must be going through it. So again, it was a way to make myself selfishly feel better about myself, but also contribute to people and hopefully help them. And I feel like I've done that, because I get consistent messages, probably even weekly now, where people say, you've made me either go and see a therapist, or you've made me consider my own mental health. And I think it's important as well, because often people don't realize how bad they are. We can quite often get caught up in these places where we just think it's the norm. And I've spoke with friends in the past about it before. If you live in London and or anywhere, wherever you live, but if you are commuting into the city or into the job or wherever you work, if you look around at the faces of the people who are stood around you, it's quite bleak.
And I
really, now when I walk into work or get the train to work, I really try and make a point of really standing upright, having like the good posture, trying to have like a smile, not a smile on my face in a creepy way, but like trying to like look relatively happy with the day, because I think that sets the intention of how you're going to feel. But there's just so many people who don't feel good about what they're doing, or don't enjoy their lives. And I just think it's such a shame, because it's such an incredible thing to experience. And even like a basic morning routine like meditation can make you see brighter colors on the way into work. And I think when you live from a place from ego as well, which is, you know, a large percentage of us do in our youths, because we don't know anything else, we identify to material things, achievements and job titles, as you mentioned, that's all coming from a place from ego. And you know, a lot of the people who go on these journeys and become happy have gone through the process of getting over that. And a lot of these people are guys like athletes and the people that I speak with. So I know they've all got a journey, so I'll try and tease it out of people as much as possible.
Yeah, no, I know, it's great. And it's great how you kind of get them slowly talking about it, and they're like, oh, okay, we're going to talk about this. And then they just don't stop talking. It's great. it's about kind of finding the deeper meaning, I guess, rather than like egotistical meanings. So on the podcast, you've had some like insane guests on, Ed Milet, Isaac Chamberlain, I really enjoyed as well. And he obviously was at your event that you were talking about. This is quite a difficult question, but if you could summarize some of the main things that you've learned personally from some of your guests, what would you say would be like the few really important messages?
That's such a difficult question, because it depends how it depends how you want me to answer. Do you want me to answer it from a position of like practices, or do you want me to answer it from a position of like life lessons, or
maybe something that's personally resonated with you? So whether it's like actual practical things, that's fine, or whether it's more of like a deeper meaning thing.
Okay, so I'd say I'll do practices first. So something that comes up very, very frequently is meditation or breath exercises. So I practice meditation myself anyway. And then I started doing some breathwork exercises just before I started the podcast. But it's amazing to me how frequently that comes up, whether it's from an NFL superstar that's won the Super Bowl, or Tony Jeffries talked about it, who won the bronze medal for us at Beijing Olympics in boxing. And kind of everyone in between. So many people talk about breathing, whether it's Wim Hof breathing, connected breathing, and it has such an impact. And the other one I say was cold water exposure. So many people talk about cold water exposure, whether it's doing plunge pools or whether it's doing cold shower as part of your morning routine. So those two are like massive things as far as like practices and how you can feel better. There's science and studies around it that tell you why it makes you feel better. So as an example, cold water releases norepinephrine in your bloodstream, and norepinephrine is a form of adrenaline, and adrenaline obviously makes you feel good. So it's one of the happy hormones, and there's also serotonin release as well. So I try and do it every morning now, and sometimes I'm not brave enough for it, but I reckon I do it like maybe 5 mornings out of 7. Nice. And it has a massive impact. Yeah, even like if I'm having a really bad day, which there was about 2.5 weeks ago, I had a really rough day where I just felt a bit, some of the mental health stuff crept back in, to be honest, and I just jumped in a freezing cold shower, and it every little bit helps. Like, it did dent that darkness and make me feel a little bit better. So the cold water is a huge one. Lessons. Do you know what? It might sound a little bit weird, but there's two that are really front of mind for me at the moment. And it's probably going to come from people that you might not expect necessarily. But one of them is a friend of mine now. She's such a lovely girl, and she's become a really good friend of mine since doing the podcast episode. But Esme Gummer, who was on SAS Who Dares Wins.
Yeah, loved watching her.
Yeah, she's brilliant. She's so positive, and she's got an amazing energy. And we had a really good chat. And one of the things that she said to me, which massively resonated, and it was just so simple, and it was a kind of an off-the-cuff comment, was just... proud chest, humble chin. Just like, it's so simple, but I actually do it quite a lot now, because I think sometimes the subjects that we talk about can sound either like you're forcing opinions on people, or you're worthy, or you know more than somebody else. So it's just something that I try and think about quite consistently now. So just like, you have a proud chest because you're confident of who you are and what you're saying, but you've got a humble chin because you're not like forcing it on people. And it's just like a posture thing as well. And again, posture has such an impact on you. And the other one is, there's so many that I could pick out here, but this is another one that for some reason is just front of mind for me at the moment. But I had an amazing guy on called Andrew Cotton, who's a big wave surfer. And, you know, we could talk about sacrifice and all this other stuff when we're building businesses and all these things. But I sacrificed my New Year's Eve to go and stay in Devon because I was so desperate to record an episode with him, because I think he's an amazing guy and he's achieved awesome things. So on the 2nd of January, I recorded with him. And we spoke about something that he termed end of the pool syndrome.
Okay.
And ultimately what he does is he does a lot of breathwork holding because he's a big wave surfer. He had the world record in big wave surfing for a period. He rode a 90-foot wave in Nazaré in Portugal, and he's just achieved amazing things. He does awesome stuff, but he does a lot of training with like breathwork, breath holds in the pool, and like breathing all your air out so you've got no oxygen in your body, or like the oxygen starting to be used, holding your breath until you like have convulsions, and then swimming the length of the pool underwater, which,
oh my god,
to me, yeah,
terrifying.
But he called this thing end of the pool syndrome, which is basically like when you're looking down at the pool and you can see the black line on the floor and you're not looking at the end of the pool, you can get to the end no problem, it's fine. It feels hard, yeah, which life can feel hard. But when you're just focusing on that thing and you're doing that kind of one foot in front of the other and you're just looking at where you are and you're being present, it feels fine and it's doable and it's achievable, and he gets to the end of the pool. But if he at any point looks up and sees the end of the pool, immediately psychologically you change your perception of whether you can do it, whether it's achievable, because you can see how far away you are, you start to panic, and then you need to go up for air. And that's just something that, like, we did it in January stayed with me for so long, and I've thought about that so many times over and over and over again. And it was, there's little like gems like that, and they have to be really good to stay with me because I have these conversations all the time. So I wish I could listen back to my episodes more and get more of the information. But the end of the pool syndrome one was huge for me because I do try and bring that into my life a lot. And it, you know, when you want success and you're impatient, like high achievers are, I try and think about that end of the pool syndrome thing, because it's not just when you're in the pool, it's in life and the actions that you take daily as well.
Yeah, I really like that one, because that totally resonates with me as well, because you can set goals and like business goals and stuff, but if they seem so overwhelming, you're so at risk of not even starting or like giving up. And if you actually break it down into little steps and just tick them off more slowly, like you're more likely to accomplish more stuff. Yeah, that's such a strong message. Okay, I would love to chat a little bit about, because I know you went to Tony Robbins' Unleash the Power Within in April, as did I. And for any of the listeners who don't know who Tony Robbins is, he is one of like the ultimate personal growth gurus, if you like, huge in America. And he did a 4-day seminar at the Excel Center in London. And there are about 12,000 people there, I think, who basically came to kind of sort their lives out. So I'd love to hear a bit more about why you went and what you got out of it, because it was very, like, it was a very unique thing.
It was very unique, wasn't it? It was amazing. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I didn't really know what to expect. came away feeling like a different person, but really hard to kind of summarize it in words as well.
Yeah. Oh, so you want me to do that then?
Yeah. yes, please.
So I'd always known about Tony Robbins. My dad, after he finished the business in the city, became a life coach. So he'd kind of put a lot of these practices on to me from a young age. Yeah. So which is why I've always been interested and fascinated in personal development. So I was aware of Tony Robbins, and I'd always wanted to go to one of his conventions, but it's, you're giving up four days, and that's difficult to do at times in your life. So I pre-booked it far in advance, so I didn't have a choice and had to go. And I'm so pleased I did. So I think if you don't know much about Tony Robbins and you haven't done much self-discovery or personal development yourself, you might have been a bit freaked out by it.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, like I've done a lot of that stuff, and it even surprised me to the kind of how people call it a cult. I don't know if I'd go that far. I know why people can sometimes think that and say that, but it was very intense. It was incredible, and I felt similar to you in the sense that I felt like a new person at the end of it. I was so energized. I felt incredible, and I had an amazing experience. I was also lucky enough. I spoke about Esme earlier there. I went with Esme and her friend Mia as well. So it was really nice to be able to share the 4 days with those guys. And I think it's important to have people like that around you when you're doing something like that, because it can be life altering. And that's kind of the whole point of it. I'd say there's some ups and downs. I think the ups were going through things like the six human needs, which was something that really kind of opened my eyes to how everyone behaves, I think, which was something that really resonated with me. And I took that away, and I've continued to think about that since. I think the negatives were that it's an Americanized convention, of course. He's an American guy. So they do a lot of selling from stage, which like started to grate on me a little bit at the end. You know, we spent £800 on coming here. Can we just enjoy this 4 days? And also the fact that Tony Robbins has done so much of this stuff in his 40 years in the business, that his throat's so fucked now that he kind of, he could only do two of the days out of the four. So I'd say there's some of the negatives, but the fire walk at the beginning on day one was amazing. Such a great experience. And I think just the connection with other people there, forcing yourself in uncomfortable positions, like jumping up, dancing, screaming and hollering like every half an hour.
Without any alcohol.
Without any alcohol, I know. How are we supposed to do that? We're English. But I think forcing yourself to do that kind of on the hour, every hour, is quite refreshing. You go out into the world, just think like, you kind of let go of your insecurities, I think, and it gives you like an abundance of energy that I hadn't felt for a long time. So it was hugely shifting for my perspective. I think I'm still holding on to a lot of that as well, which is good. It means it's benefited me since April, wasn't it?
Yeah, so, April.
Yeah. So yeah, an amazing experience with amazing people, and I would highly recommend it. I'd be tempted. I know I just slagged off them selling from stage, but I would be tempted to do the what's the next
business
one?
Business Mastery. Was it Business Mastery?
Yeah, what the one that's in Miami.
And that's I can't remember.
Something Desire or something like that.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's like a 6 day.
I have a friend that went to the Business Mastery one in Amsterdam just now. And she said it was really, really good. So yeah.
Maybe we should do that one next.
Yeah. Definitely. So I'd love to chat more about your event that you did with Calm that I went to, which was amazing, by the way. So what was your reasoning for putting on this event? And I'd love for you to just tell the listeners a bit about it, because it was like a really amazing event. And the speakers that you had there were just like so captivating. Like, I thought it was incredible.
Oh, thanks, Susie. And thanks so much for coming and supporting it. It's one of the reasons why I was excited to speak to you today, because I know you've listened to the podcast for a while and we've spoken on Instagram before, and you told me at the event that you were going to start a podcast. So I'm pleased that I can be a guest and help push it as well. So, the event, I mean, at that stage, I'd done about 35 episodes maybe in and around there. So for me, just to look about, I mean, podcasts are amazing, and I'm fortunate enough to have like a pretty good audience, and that means that you can impact people, but you don't really know how much you're impacting people, because you can only see how many listeners you get. You can't really get like tangible feedback from it, other than the DMs which are sent which are lovely and kind of give you the motivation to continue with it. But I wanted to take it to the next step, which meant for me, you know, the natural progression was to do events and live interviews. So again, I'd been thinking about that after about 6 months into doing the podcast. And as I said to you before, it took me probably about a year to actually finally do that. But that's not because of a lack of wanting to do it. It's just because the organization and the time that come with doing these things are always more than we imagine they're going to be. So yeah, I was actually really pleased that the first one was the event that you came to. The second one's going to be in September, but this first one, it was nice because it was Mental Health Awareness Week, so I had to do it that week.
Yeah,
it gave me a date to work towards, and it gave me something to commit to. So I worked with the amazing mental health charity Calm, who do awesome stuff for trying to reduce suicide in everybody, actually, but they focus on male youths because it's the highest statistic for, well, the highest rate of death for people under the age of 45 in males.
Yeah, that's so scary. I can't believe that stat. It's mental, isn't it? It's just crazy that that is.
I know. Like, I was looking, I was even thinking it. I kind of wanted to say it on the night, but I didn't in the end because I thought it was a bit heavy. But looking around the room, everyone in there who was a male under the age of 45, which is all of the males in there, so probably about 40 males in there, our highest risk of death was killing ourselves. It's not like, it's not traffic accidents, it's not cancer, it's not any other disease, it's literally taking our own lives. And the stat sadly is only going higher, but Calm are doing awesome stuff to try and reduce that statistic at least, and they've got great people that do stuff for them. So they were brilliant in supporting me with the event, and we had an awesome speaker come in who's a mental health advocate called Paul McGregor, who's done awesome stuff. And
he's great.
Yeah, he's got a really sad story about his dad taking his own life, who didn't really show any symptoms of mental health, which is scary because, again, we just don't talk about it enough. And then I just had some friends of mine who are amazing people sit on the panel and talk about their own experiences. And we had it just all seemed to work out and come together, Susie. I think when you're on the right track and you're doing something that is the right thing to do and that is going to have a good impact, it sort of seems to come together. So I had Isaac Chamberlain that you mentioned, the professional boxer, who's an absolute hero. I love him. So he got to speak about his experience with mental health from an athlete's perspective and being at the very top in sport. And then another one of my friends, Chris Ball, who's the co-founder of Mana Gym, which if you live in London, you should check those guys out because they're absolutely awesome. Ex-fighter and business owner who's had his own experiences with it as well. And then Rebecca Dennis, who's brilliant, who's a breathwork coach. So coming from a completely different perspective, a female talking about how you can manage mental health and her own experience of trying to take her own life. And then Simon Dent, who's another close friend of mine, who also had mass issues with mental health and was sectioned for 6 months. So varying experiences of mental health and varying methods of managing their mental health. And it was quite like a intense experience on the night. I felt the energy was amazing and it was great.
It was amazing. And I think the diversity of the panelists was so interesting because they were all brought together from the same theme, but like completely different types as well. And some of them had like contrasting views on stuff, which was really interesting, but they were all brought together on the same like topic, which I thought was really, really cool.
Yeah, no, thanks. Yeah, no, that just worked out. It literally, Rebecca only got involved like 2 days previous because she had a client who was a fighter as well, who had taken his life. So she kind of called me up, was like, she'd been on the podcast before. I'm actually a client of hers as well. So she just said, can I help with anything? And I said, she wanted to do an event with me. And I said, look, why don't you just get involved in the event I'm doing in 2 days? She was like, okay, let's do it. And she, yeah, I know. So these things work out. And she rounded off the evening with a nice meditation at the end, which I think was a cool way to end. So
yeah, I loved that. I think that's really good as well, because a lot of people in that room probably have never tried meditation. And actually, it's not as scary as people think when you do it for the first time. It's like not that, if it's just shutting your eyes and like doing a bit of breathing, really. But sometimes people get put off because it's like all spiritual and like, I don't know. But so it was nice to just sort of force everyone to do it, I think, because I remember gone away and then incorporated that into their lives and otherwise wouldn't have. So
Well, do you know what, it made me a little bit like, not maybe envious is the wrong word, but like people saying to me, oh, it's the first time I've ever done meditation, it had such an impact on me. And I'm like, oh, I wish I still got it for like 10 minutes of breathing or whatever. But
yeah,
to do it more, it takes longer for you to, because you start to feel effects straight away and then it kind of levels off and you just have like a gradual thing, like you do with anything. But I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think that's great. Okay, so we're kind of coming up to time. So I have a little quick fire round that I end on, if that's all right with you.
Of course.
Perfect. Okay, so first one, what is the best book that you've ever read?
Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. It's still my favourite book. I read it every year. It was the book that got me on the journey of self-discovery. I mean, I kind of was into personal development stuff anyway, like I told you, through my dad, and generally wanted to be better. But this was the book that really hit it home for me and impacted me in a way that I can't really describe. It's hard, but it really moved me. And it's one that I return to every year. It's a relatively short read. It's about 180 pages, which I like. And it just has brilliant examples of some incredible people like Abraham Lincoln speaking through his experiences with depression, hearing about various orators in the past from the Roman times about how they overcame challenges and how they became or how they built their legacies and stuff. And just hearing from these people and hearing their background stories gave me a huge amount of inspiration. And he breaks it down really well in the book, and yeah, that's why I return to it every year, and that's why it's still my favourite.
Nice. That one, I haven't read that one, but it sounds really good. I'll definitely have to put that on my list. I will link it in the show notes as well for anyone who wants to look it up. Okay, second one. So I created Well and Wild with the sense that to be well in life, you have to do some wild things and sometimes dare to go against the norm. So what's the wildest thing you've ever done in your life?
Jesus.
I know. Everyone's like, Susie, why are you asking me this?
I mean, I could go anywhere with this. What direction do you want to go? I'll keep it PG.
Well, I had an ultra marathon guy on last week, and he was talking about these marathons he's done in the desert, and I asked him that question. He goes, run a marathon in Milton Keynes in a mankini. I was like, are you really going to choose that against all of this other crazy stuff? So go with whatever you want to do.
Wildest thing I've ever done. I mean, moving to America was pretty wild. Not knowing anybody. It was for a sport that I loved, and it was a great opportunity, but it was a 2-year commitment to something that I had absolutely no idea what was on the other side. I also had done that previously as well. I moved to Canada before I went to university to snowboard. That's when I quit football after I didn't get a pro contract. So I went and snowboarded over there to become an instructor. They're pretty wild. There must be something that's more fun than that. I mean, that's quite boring, isn't it, really, just talking about
no I've, that's a good one.
Maybe I mean, I hurled myself off a 60-foot jump in Canada and did a 360
snowboarding
before I was remotely qualified to do it, and landed it. I'll give you that.
Landed it.
Yeah,
that's amazing. That's a good one. We'll go for that.
Okay.
Okay, and then finally, God, this is a good one for you. And actually, you'll be like, what do I choose? What is the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
I mean, if you ask me this now and ask me in a month, they'd probably be different.
So, yeah.
I'll tell you one that I got recently, which was, so I recently flew to LA to do some episodes of the podcast, and it was an amazing trip, but I wanted to push myself outside of my comfort zone as much as possible. So I didn't book any hotels. I didn't book any travel inside the States. I just knew that I was getting into LAX with nowhere to stay or anything like that. So I just kind of got all of those thoughts in my mind that I spoke to you about earlier about why are you doing this? Why do you think you can just fly over to the US and meet all these amazing people and do all this push yourself outside your comfort zone and be successful with this, like, why are you bothering? So I went to my first point of call, my mentor, my dad, called him up. I was just like, what am I doing? Sat in the back of the team, don't even have a hotel, but it's like, what's the point? And he just said, fortune favors the brave. And it just kind of, like, in one sentence just kind of hit me, and I was like, okay, that's why I'm doing it. Like, I'm pushing it because I don't know what's at the other side of it. I'm pushing it because fortune does favour the brave. Like, something's going to come of this. I don't know what it is, but something's going to come of it. And I kind of feel like I already know what that is, but fortune favours the brave for me is just a really simple little quip, which is just like, you know, take a risk. If you're brave enough, if you've got courage and you give it a go, something's going to come of it. You might not achieve the thing that you set out to do, but something's going to come from it anyway.
That's amazing. That's so powerful. And when you think about the content that you got from that trip, and like, oh, I've listened to that and absorbed that, and that's inspired me and lots of other people, 100% it's worth it.
Oh, good. No, I'm pleased. It was an awesome trip. It was expensive, but it was awesome.
Yeah, I can imagine. And it's LA.
I know. It was awesome. Like, I love it over there. So yeah, basically off the back of that, I met somebody over there that's possibly going to give me the opportunity to live over in LA for a little while. So
wow, yeah, that's amazing.
That came from that. So yeah.
Cool. Exciting. Yeah. I was just about to ask you what you've got coming up.
Yeah. I mean, take flight wise, there's loads of different stuff. So I've got another event coming up in September, which actually is going to be themed around my favourite book, The Obstacle is the Way. So I'm going to have some awesome people who have been through serious hardships. And we're going to have another similar style panel chat and another speaker. So that's going to be really, really fun. Loads of people have had benefit from coming to the first event. Like, even someone who was there got a job through somebody else who was there, which was really nice.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
So little things like that. So I'm hoping to do more like networky style meetups at the end of those events too, where people can hopefully connect and whether they work together or jump on each other's podcasts or get jobs with one of them, whatever it might be. So that's a cool thing. I'm going to start another podcast. I'm launching that in September.
Nice.
Yeah, which is going to be more practice based. So the stories that I share are really inspiring, and you've been kind enough to say it's inspired you as well. Like, I think that's great, but how can I make it even more impactful? So I'm going to be doing short, like 10, 15 minute episodes right. with an expert in their field who will give you either a guided meditation or tips for better running technique and speed, or tips for better marketing strategy or whatever like that. So short little bits of advice that everyone can use and take into their businesses or into their fitness or whatever. So
yeah.
That's another, and then like a million other things I could talk to you about, but I know we're running out of time.
Yeah, and where can the listeners find you and the podcast?
So I prefer Spotify personally. I think it's a better listener experience than Spotify. So just Take Flight. I used to spell it flight with FL1GHD, but I've changed. Yeah. But if you just type in, yeah, Spotify is not kept up with that yet. But if you just type in Take Space FL, then mine will come up at the top.
Link it as well.
Thank you. And then my website is still spelled the old way, fl1ght.co.uk, where I put a bunch of blogs on there about either practices that I've tried or different things that are going on. All my book recommendations are on there as well. And all the advice on all the dates for the events and stuff will be on there too. And then my Instagram is @markwhittle_tf, which is where I just put loads of random posts.
Mostly of my nice. Oh no, that's amazing. Love that. Thanks so much for coming on. Such an inspiring conversation. And I love what you're doing with the brand and everything. Everyone needs to go and check it out, and I'll link it all in the show notes.
Thanks, Susie. No, I love chatting to you, and hopefully we speak again soon. You come to my next event.
Yeah, hopefully. So that's the end of the episode. Thank you so much to Mark for coming on. I really, really appreciate it. And thank you so much for listening as well. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd be very, very grateful if you could send it on to one friend. I would love to grow the reach of this. And we've got such inspirational guests with such amazing messages that I really would love to share with other people that need to hear these messages. So thank you so much for listening, and I'll chat to you next week.